Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There's a phrase I use a lot. I call it the Dog Nation bubble. You may have heard me say this before. Now, this is not the same thing as the NBA bubble, where everyone's kind of quarantined away and separate from the rest of the world, although I hope that those of us inside the Dog Nation bubble are all healthy and safe as well. But the Dog Nation bubble is not the same thing as the NBA bubble, nor is it the same thing as, like, say, the dot-com bubble, for those of you who lived through that, the real estate bubble, you know, a decade or so ago. It's not that either. This is more of an information bubble. We kind of understand this kind of stuff. We have a tendency to kind of gravitate towards people who are like us. I think our country, in large measure, suffers from too many information bubbles, but that is not the point of today's show. That's for an entirely different topic, for an entirely different kind of show. But in the world of college football, there is a Dog Nation bubble, too, and all fan bases, I think, for the most part, have some version of this, where the conversation that happens in and among Georgia fans is sort of different than the conversation that the nation might be having about Georgia. And I say this all the time when we bring on national writer this or national writer that. Sometimes it's kind of nice to puncture that bubble and just kind of find out from 10,000 feet above, looking down on the Georgia program, what do people think about it? What are they saying about it? But it's also just kind of interesting sometimes to kind of highlight how they are different and what Georgia fans may be thinking, what Georgia fans may be knowing, what may be the dominant narrative when person dressed in red and black talks to person dressed in red and black that someone, say, for ESPN may not quite have noticed yet. Let me give you a very interesting version of this as we transition into a little Georgia quarterback talk off the top of the show. So there was an article at ESPN.com, you know, new top 25 is out, and ESPN does these things. They put little blurbs next to all the top 25 teams, things like that. And once again, the couple sentence blurb is the perfect example of what someone outside the bubble of a particular fandom might be writing about, might be thinking about. You don't have time to dive into the, you know, third string left guard. You have to just sort of give the global perspective from 10,000 feet of what's going on in a place like Georgia. The same way that you and me, if we talked about Clemson, you know, we may mention Travis Etienne, we may mention Trevor Lawrence, we may get into a couple of other names, but there are a lot of other players that Clemson fans talk about a lot that maybe, you know, you and I just wouldn't be quite well-versed in talking about. So I think we have an example of well outside the Dog Nation bubble, maybe news traveling slowly, maybe people that are not Georgia fans, but people don't live in the Georgia media world, not quite being aware of maybe how things have changed for Georgia, at least in terms of the quarterback narrative over the course of the last couple of days as to who might be the starting quarterback for Georgia. This is not a criticism. I'm just more pointing this out to have fun more than anything else. But Alex Scarborough, writing in ESPN.com, quick blurb about Georgia and its lofty spot near the top of the Associated Press Top 25, says about Georgia that after Jamie Newman has opted out, the transfer everyone expects to jump right in for Newman is JT Daniels, Alex Scarborough writes. He goes on to say, if Daniels is cleared and is half the player the Bulldog fans hope he'll be, a trip to the playoff might not be out of the question. Once again, that's Alex Scarborough for ESPN saying all Georgia fans hope the starting quarterback for the upcoming season is the transfer from USC, JT Daniels. And if he is that guy, maybe Georgia goes to the college football playoff. Now, the last part of that's undoubtedly true. Georgia fans hope that's the case. And I think on the basis of the Georgia fans that I've talked to, heard from, many of you who either comment live on video or reach out to me on Twitter, Dog Nation Daily, if Daniels is the one that emerges at the quarterback spot, I don't think anyone has a problem with that. Daniels is probably a popular player. He was a player because he's a former five-star recruit that people know something about. They've heard of him before, so he kind of showed up on the Georgia campus with a little bit of status just on the basis of the fact that that was a name that many of us remembered from the recruiting trail a couple of years ago. But the notion that this is the clear fan favorite to be the starting quarterback for Georgia, at this point in time, I'm not quite so sure that's true. At this point in time, I think there's a huge groundswell of support that seems to be moving in the direction of the other guy that's mentioned here as a possible starter, Dwan Mathis. Now, let me state this again. This is not anything I believe on the part of Georgia fans that's anti-JT Daniels. I think that Daniels will be very popular with Georgia fans, and I think the Georgia fans have high expectations for Daniels when they get a chance to see him on the field. But let's just be honest here for a moment. the Dwan Mathis story is really hard to compete against, right? If you're looking for human interest, if you're looking for, you know, the kind of thing that gives you, you know, kind of the chill bumps a little bit, the notion of Dwan Mathis thinking that his football career might be done because of a brain injury, all of a sudden fighting back from that, crediting the Georgia staff for helping really save his life is what, you know, what the Mathis camp is going to say about all of this, to now get back to the point where he's eligible to play again, you know, medically cleared to do so, and potentially the Georgia starting quarterback, that is the stuff of dreams, right? So no one dislikes JT Daniels, but there are a lot of people who just kind of gravitate towards the Dwan Mathis story because, as I said before, it's just kind of the things that dreams are made of. In fact, Dwan Mathis put this thing out on Instagram, I guess the last day or so, bunch of comments, more than 3,000 likes when I took a snapshot of this. Nice picture of him in the Georgia uniform. And he says, "I'll never forget when I was down on my knuckles." That's Dwan Mathis saying that. Obviously, he's overcome a lot. I tell you what was very interesting with the Instagram piece, too, is lots of current Georgia players also showing up to give him the like, showing up to show him support. Mathis would seem to be, and we've assumed this now for a while, would seem to be very popular with his Georgia teammates and growing in popularity with Georgia fans there as well. So ESPN hasn't quite caught on to this yet, that this is not just the JT Daniels show and we're not heading towards an obvious coronation for Daniels. He may still win the job, and the competition that, you know, proves who the Georgia starting quarterback is may continue during the season. But as it stands right now, this is not a, as to use the word again, coronation for JT Daniels. Apparently, according to people who saw the scrimmage on Saturday, according to a lot of reports that are out there, Mathis has made a charge at this thing, made himself a real contender to be the starting quarterback of the Georgia Bulldogs. I want to turn my attention here quickly while we're on this topic to something that a Georgia player said the other day, because I think that there's an interesting idea that got expressed by Ben Cleveland. When we think about who's the starting quarterback supposed to be, you know, there's the notion of, and Todd Monken's talked about this, how accurate are you? You know, what kind of decision maker are you? You know, the kinds of things that quarterbacks typically do. But there is also something about a quarterback competition that I think can provide a sense of energy to a program that's, you know, dealing with one. And you know, listen, sometimes we can think of examples in the world of sports where quarterback competition kind of devolved into a controversy. I don't think that's what's going on here at Georgia at all. But I do think there's some potential energy to be gained from the competition that's ongoing. In fact, some version of that was asked to Georgia offensive lineman Ben Cleveland, who's been around the block now at Georgia a while, seen a bunch of quarterbacks. Here's what he said about the way the team is responding right now to the ongoing competition that, for the moment, at least to be the starter, seems to center around either Daniels or Mathis. This has been Cleveland, his assessment of that situation.
I think there's always an excitement whenever you've got competition, you know, going on like we've got. You know, you get to see, you know, different guys come in every day and rep with the ones and the twos and threes. So, you know, it definitely it creates, you know, a good vibe on the team, and, you know, just kind of lets everybody see how well they work with, you know, different groups of people here and there. So I think it's definitely fun seeing that competitive edge just from kind of, you know, rolling guys around.
So I jotted down three phrases that Ben Cleveland used there. He used the word excitement. He used the word good vibe, or the phrase good vibes. He talked about fun. And the best that I can tell, having heard from people who saw the scrimmage on Saturday, having listened to things that Georgia players themselves have said over the course of the last few days, I do think there's a sense in which Dwan Mathis, his presence in this competition, has provided some excitement. It has provided some good vibes, and it has provided some fun. Now, excitement, good vibes, and fun are not enough to make you successful as an SEC quarterback. And to go back to the idea of the Dog Nation bubble, if Mathis is eventually named as the Georgia starter, the folks kind of from the national perspective outside the realm of UGA fandom, they probably won't treat that as positively as Georgia fans might. They may be wondering what went wrong for a guy like Jamie Newman who opted out, a guy like JT Daniels who transferred in, and then if he does win the starting job, there'll be some, assuming that he's healthy, there'll be some questions about, well, how did we get to this point with Georgia? Georgia fans, though, themselves seem to have talked themselves into Mathis. If he emerges, I think they're going to be kind of okay with this. But listen, JT Daniels may be the more quiet name in this competition for now, but his accolades as a recruit, his credentials as a guy that has some experience, make him a viable part of this quarterback competition too. I think this is far from done. As I said yesterday, I think the bigger issues with all of this is not who the quarterback is, but what kind of offense do they have around them that enables them to be successful. But this is kind of getting fun. The drama's pretty rich here. The storylines, I think, are, you know, fairly well established right now. The plot thickening, if you will, Mathis versus Daniels to be the starting quarterback. And frankly, I can't wait to see where this one goes from here. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Great to have you with us, no matter how you get to us, live on video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And we could not make this show possible today without our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. They've got the word solutions right there in their name, which is an important thing to have when you face two pretty severe problems. And all homeowners know about this kind of stuff. Foundation issues, waterproofing issues. Waterproofing issues, in many ways, cause foundation issues. If you're dealing with anything like that, or if you think you might be on the verge of dealing with something like that, you need a solution to your problem. Engineered Solutions of Georgia can step in and provide that. And sometimes it's a simple fix, and if so, they are glad to tell you what that simple fix is. Sometimes it's no more than just a trip to a hardware store. But if it's more substantial than that, you want to trust ESOG because they have two full-time engineers on staff. They're also proud partners of UGA, which makes them fun to do business with. They've been good friends of ours here on Dog Nation Daily for a long time, and they're very easy to get in touch with. The number you see on your screen, or if you're listening to radio podcast, simply dial 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW. That'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk to Connor Riley today. He had a good piece up on JT Daniels on the pages of DogNation.com this morning. We'll kind of focus on some of that with Connor here. But before we do that, let me do more and kind of pick up where I left off a moment ago as we go around the doghouse delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And as I said before, it's great to have Marco's Pizza back with us on Dog Nation Daily, delivering around the doghouse here today. But I said this a moment ago, that ultimately, while the drama is around, is it Daniels? Is it Mathis? Who's the starting quarterback going to be? Mathis, maybe the fan favorite for many for right now. Daniels, the guy who has the credentials of being a former starter at the Power 5 level. While that drama is fun, the more important question is, what is the offense going to be able to do for these guys? You know, is there an offense around either of these two quarterbacks, or maybe even both of these quarterbacks if they're playing in the same game? Is there an offense that's going to be successful for them? And I think I want to zero in on just one aspect of the offensive game plan for Georgia, something that was lacking a year ago, especially in the final two-thirds of the year, and something I think is going to be important for Georgia this upcoming year. Let me show you a couple of stats on the screen here for a moment. This comes from a guy that I follow on Twitter. His name's SEC StatCat, at least that's what he calls himself. I'll put a link to this when I post the show at the worldfamousdognation.com later on today. But he was doing a big statistical breakdown of Georgia a year ago, kind of where it went wrong. And there was one aspect of what StatCat wrote that I thought was actually pretty interesting. If you look at the final eight games for Georgia on first down a year ago. So think about this. Georgia on first down, final eight games of the year. Running the ball a lot because you'd want to if you had a really good offensive line, really good running game. You'd want to do that. But look what happens for Georgia on these running plays on first down over the course of the final eight games. They're averaging just 1.75 yards before contact. That was down from averaging 4.23 yards before contact through the first four games. Why does that change? Sounds to me that the Georgia offense got a little predictable. All of a sudden, there was more stacking on the line of scrimmage, less room for running backs to run, even the great offensive line. What does that do to you then? Well, according to the SEC StatCat, Georgia's passing success rate dropped 13 percentage points on first down over the course of the final eight games. Its rushing game success rate on first down dropped 12 percentage points there as well. And success rate simply defined by the number of yards you get compared to the yards that you need. Typically 5 yards on first and 10 would be considered a successful play in college football. That's what Georgia did not do a season ago well enough. I think if you look ahead to a new starting quarterback this year, whether it's Daniels, whether it's Dwan Mathis, I think the job of Georgia offensive coordinator Todd Monken is to make the offense as easy for that new quarterback as possible. And what you do on first down, possibly being less predictable than Georgia became over the course of the last eight games last year, what you do on first down, I think, increases the likelihood of success for either Daniels or Mathis. Making the offense less predictable on first down, more successful plays on first down, just simply makes second and third down easier. With that in mind, when Georgia running backs coach Dale McGee met with the reporters the other day, he was asked to give his assessment of Todd Monken, and with the notion that Georgia needs to be better on first down, less predictable on early downs to make third downs a little easier so that the success rate goes up all the way around. In talking about what he's looking to see from Monken, I thought McGee used a very interesting word. Let me let you hear from him, then we'll wrap this up.
Coach Monken's a great offensive mind. He brings a lot of knowledge, experience. He's done it on the NFL level, college level, at a successful rate. So we're in great hands as far as that's concerned. I think we're going to be a balanced football team, and I think we're going to try to put our players in the best position to be successful, whether it's running, throwing the ball, or both. So I think that's going to be a wait-and-see deal.
So Dale McGee, who obviously wants to see his team run the ball, he's a great running backs coach, says that he's looking for balance in the Georgia offense this year. Based on the stats that I just showed you, the place that this Georgia offense really needs that balance the most is on first down. You know, keeping offense, opposing defenses guessing, finding a way to throw the ball successfully on first down to make third down a little bit more manageable. You know, Georgia was 3-and-out last year on 23% of its drives. They were the third most throwing team in the SEC on third down, at nearly 80% of the time having to throw the ball on third down because of what I think became a predictable offense in the early downs a season ago, especially over the course of the final two-thirds of the season. So if McGee wants balance, I think the place to find balance on the basis of the stats that I just showed you is on first down. If Georgia can find that, make some easy throws on first down to set up more manageable second and third downs, then whether it's Mathis, whether it's Daniels, or any other Georgia quarterback, the chances of them being successful, I think, just went way up. It's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. You're settling in to watch some football. Many of you did that this weekend. Actually, busy time in sports. Big golf event coming up this weekend. A lot of baseball, basketball going on, or you just want an affordable meal with your family. For me, that's incredibly important. Marco's Pizza, great choice on that. How about medium one-topping pizzas right now? $6.99 each. You can get as many of those as you want. So if you're coaching soccer teams, baseball teams, I'm actually doing both of that right now. You need to feed them. Incredible, incredible savings from our friends at Marco's Pizza. They deliver Around the Doghouse to us today here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of George. All right, we are a little over time here, so we'll try to pick up the pace a little bit. I want to do more on quarterbacks now. Connor's got a good piece up on JT Daniels. We'll focus on him after speaking a little bit about Mathis a good bit off the top of the program. And Connor saw Brock Vandegrift with his own eyes on Friday night. What was his evaluation, his assessment? We'll get that from him, too. It's Dog Nation Daily. It's presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, and it's great to have you with us today.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
As I said before, Connor Riley was in beautiful North Georgia Mountains, Rabid County, Tiger, Georgia, over the course of the weekend. So we'll find out from him about what he saw, what he thought about Brock Vandegrift before we're done. But let me kind of begin with the sort of the men of the hour for the moment, the hot topic around Georgia football. I'll get more in-depth into JT Daniels and his health in a moment, but first, kind of an overview of the quarterback competition. We'll welcome in Connor Riley from DogNation.com. Connor, appreciate you being here, and hope you're doing well today.
I am. As always, a pleasure to be on with you.
So let me kind of just stipulate a couple things here for a moment. I think that JT Daniels got a lot of credentials, former five-star. He was a starter at the Power 5 level. I think those are really important lines to have on your resume. If that's your Wikipedia page, I think you are, you know, a well-credentialed quarterback in a competition like this. But Dwan Mathis, maybe just on the basis of his personality, certainly his backstory, has seemingly kind of emerged as a little bit of a fan favorite for the moment, I believe. Now, fans can be fickle. They can change their mind quick. So you can't fall too in love with fan adulation. But would you agree with that assessment of the current situation at the moment?
Again, as I sort of wrote and touched on this morning, if JT Daniels is cleared at this point, I wonder how different the conversation we're having is. I think it's pretty clear that this Saturday with this past scrimmage, the reason Dwan Mathis, in my opinion, and again, this is opinion, this is a 2+2 doesn't always necessarily equal 4. But what we know about that scrimmage, JT Daniels wasn't working with the second team offense. Right. He was sort of only thrown in there for situational roles. That's something that you would want to work on if you're going to be a first team starting quarterback. But As of right now, the last time we spoke to Kirby Smart, and we'll get a chance to talk to him later today, Daniels had not yet been cleared. And if he wasn't cleared for game-ready status this past scrimmage, it makes a lot of sense to give a lot of those first-team reps to Mathis, because you can't necessarily bank on him getting cleared in the next 2 weeks at this point.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, get more into the Daniels health part of this in a moment, because I think there's a lot of that that's, I think, still kind of confusing, and I think you've got to wrestle with that part of it. But do you not get the sense, though, that there's just a, I mean, you know, Ben Cleveland was asked directly the other day, and I played the audio a moment ago, of, is there some excitement around a quarterback competition? You know, the energy that exists around this conversation right now, at least among the fans, I sort of get the sense that's being supplied more by Mathis than I think it's being supplied by Daniels. That's not a knock on Daniels. I think that Daniels can be a very good quarterback in this offense, but there just seems to be a little bit of buzz around Mathis from the fan base here, and I feel like that's a little bit hard to deny.
I understand that, but in September, in early September, or before the game start, you know, for me, excitement, that's May, June, early August sort of hype. Right now, for me, it's sort of more nervousness with this quarterback situation, with what we've known. Because 2 weeks ago, when Jamie Newman was here, we were not hearing anything about Dwan Mathis. So suddenly he leaves, and now Mathis has suddenly ascended to be this guy who's going to be the starting quarterback, and I do expect him at this point in time to be that week one starter. It does make me a little nervous, just given what we've seen with this quarterback situation before with Kirby Smart. He famously in 2018 said, there is no plan when it comes to the quarterback position. And given the struggles Georgia's had at that spot in recent years, while I understand some might be excited for a new face, a guy like Dwan Mathis, especially given his background and his story, it does, for me personally, bring a little bit more nervousness or cautiousness when it comes to the situation.
Well, I think that's justified. I mean, I think something will have gone wrong a little bit if experienced quarterback end up not being the starting quarterback for Georgia, and someone who doesn't have that experience does. I'll question how we got to that point, but there's one thing I want to push back on, and I'm saying this on someone who is as high as anybody on Jamie Newman. I called for him to be the starting quarterback at Georgia. I assumed he had a chance to be successful if he was that starting quarterback, but it's important to know that to the extent that you put any, you know, interest in like what's being said on social media, guys like Eric Stokes, Malik Herring were talking up Dwan Mathis back then when Jamie Newman's still on this roster.
Right. You can be excited for him, and I think there was some excitement. Part of that, again, it goes to his backstory. He had brain surgery less than 18 months ago, and that's a very scary situation for him to even come back and get to this point. Says a lot about him and his mental toughness. So while, yes, I understand that, sometimes you don't always need to be the most liked guy to be, I think, the best starter or the best guy in the best spot.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. And I think that if JT Daniels wins the starting job and plays well, then he'll be a huge fan favorite. And unfortunately, this is just the dark side of all this conversation. If Mathis gets the starting nod and plays poorly, people, and we have tens of thousands of people that'll listen to this show today, a lot of those people who are touting for Mathis now will forget everything they ever said. If Mathis gets the starting job and plays poorly, that's why you can't fall too in love with the adulation one way or the
other. Right. This time a year ago, Jake Fromm was beloved by almost every Georgia fan, and Justin Fields by a lot was seen as the plague. And now a year later, you see how things switch, where I think there are a lot more people who are sympathetic to Fields, and the tables have turned on Fromm given, you know, what has transpired with him in the past year, both on and off the field.
So on the JT Daniels thing, I think it's really weird because it seems unusual for Kirby Smart to say we expect him to be cleared. That's, you know, Smart is typically pretty careful with his words. To say we expect him to be cleared and then have that not happen, to me, would be a little out of character for Kirby Smart. I have assumed the entire time that it was I probably shouldn't use, you know, fancy phrases like this, a fait accompli.
Yep.
That JT Daniels is going to be cleared. But then you hear the buzz from the scrimmage on Saturday of, hey, he's barely playing. Dwan Mathis is playing the lion's share of all this time. Daniel's playing some, but not as a backup. As kind of a situational starter, you're left to wonder, well, wait a second, is he more hurt? People are saying it's not a full-on brace. It's like one of those sleeves that, you know, people wear when they're jogging, or I guess you'd describe it as. But I mean, is there a chance that JT Daniels, I know you wrote about this, is there a chance he's just hurt still?
Yeah, I think we've seen, Georgia fans know very well, you can look back at Malcolm Mitchell and Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb, now granted, he didn't have an ACL injury, but he had a very significant knee injury in October of his sophomore season. Comes back less than a year later, runs for over 200 yards in that first game against North Carolina. Conversely, Malcolm Mitchell tears his ACL in the first game against Clemson in 2013. He doesn't end up getting back onto the field until the fifth or sixth game of that 2014 season. So knee injuries, they're all different. You know, Dominic Blaylock was a guy who tore his knee in December. He was back and cleared and ready to go earlier in August or September, whatever the date is. It escapes my mind at this point. But knee injuries don't always heal the same way. And it's sort of been clear for a while now that Daniels has taken a little bit longer to heal based off what we've heard even going into August, given his knee injury occurred August 31st of 2019. So I think we can say it's a longer healing knee injury. And it's at this point, it's not exactly totally surprising that it's still taking a little bit longer to heal.
But the only thing about that, though, is, and I'm not a doctor, I guess I'm not really qualified to talk about anything, so I might as well just talk about this, might as well talk about anything else. But if he was hurt, even though you're not tackling quarterbacks in a scrimmage, it still seems risky to have him out there. So the fact that he is practicing and he's been practicing with the ones, at least splitting reps, even going back to the time when Jamie Newman was still in this roster, while he's clearly, or at least possibly hurt enough that he wasn't practicing a ton on Saturday, part of me wonders, well, how hurt can he really be if he's been practicing this entire time? Because you're still using your legs to plant and throw. You could be rolled up on very, very quickly, even in a non-contact situation. I mean, you got very violent guys colliding into each other, you know, just a few inches from you, even if you're wearing the black non-contact jersey. So part of me is a little specious of the notion that he's that hurt. Otherwise, why would he be practicing as much as he has been?
All right. The first question asked to Kirby Smart needs to be, is JT Daniels cleared? And if the answer to that is no, I think the follow-up has to be, well, then what is the difference between being able to be cleared for practice, because he is going through scrimmages. The first two scrimmages, he was working with the first team, and by all indications, he was full go in that. But then not to be cleared for game action. What is the sort of difference there, and what is, as much as he could potentially illuminate us on this, the sort of medical difference or clearance needed to get to that point?
Wouldn't you love it if he just sort of brought out a medical chart and started like showing you, like,
showing the knee,
the patella tendon and things like that? Well, son, what you got to do is you got to look at this, you got to look at that. Let me tell you what I don't believe. So here, of all the things that could possibly be true, here is one thing I am pretty confident saying is not true. And there's obviously a chance that I'm wrong about this as well. I don't believe that Daniels has practiced so well that he's emerged as the starting quarterback. And to use kind of an analogy that was given to me, that what happened on Saturday in the scrimmage that McGill Society donors and former players got a chance to see was a fourth NFL preseason game where you don't necessarily feel the need to play your starter. I don't believe that's true on the simple basis of this. If Daniels was splitting reps with Jamie Newman when he's here, if he has been splitting reps with Dwan Mathis since Newman's been gone, that doesn't seem like a lot of practice time to clearly make yourself the starting quarterback, to say nothing of the fact that Kirby Smart has explicitly stated that no one has separated themselves. Even if we're a little, you know, skeptical of some of the things that Kirby might say to the media, if it is true that reps were split with Newman, reps have been split with Mathis, the idea that in a split rep situation, Daniels could have been so good that he won the quarterback competition so decidedly that he didn't have to play in the third scrimmage, I just don't believe that claim.
Right. Time is a social construct, but it's hard to believe that Jamie Newman's only been opted out less than 2 weeks ago. So it's not a lot of time in my opinion, for Daniels to really separate himself and emerge as that clear-cut starter, especially when you factor in the knee injury that he's working with. So they had one scrimmage where they both sort of split reps with the ones, and then this last scrimmage, from all indications, Mathis is the guy that took the majority of the reps there with the ones. It just doesn't, from what we've heard, add up that he is, if he were healthy, he was going to be the week one starter. Now, I think pivoting and moving this conversation forward, personally, I don't think it matters all that much who that week one starter is. Do you know how many games Arkansas has won, SEC games Arkansas has won since 2017?
It's like one or something.
It is one. Yeah. Georgia has won three SEC East titles. Arkansas has won one SEC game. So Georgia should win that game regardless of who it puts out there at quarterback. But I think that second game against Auburn, to me, that is the more important game where you have to have that starting quarterback identified and say, this is going to be the guy who's going to lead our offense in 2020.
You made this point off the air yesterday. I think it's an excellent one that really is a 2 week story, because whoever your best quarterback is, you've got to play him versus Auburn. You don't have to against Arkansas for the reasons you just articulated, but you do against Auburn, because I think Auburn's good enough to beat you if you're not at your best. So therefore, once again, just to openly speculate, do you think this is the kind of quarterback competition we've seen Nick Saban orchestrate many years in the past, where, like, say, in 2015, Cooper Bateman got some early nods. Jake Coker eventually emerged during the season. he was the guy that was supposed to win the job all the way along, and he eventually did. Do you think this is a situation where the guy that I assume was the quarterback, JT Daniels, he's supposed to win, and so now he'll just be asked to do that during the season, maybe against Arkansas, and then take those snaps against Auburn? Do you think that's what this is likely coming down to?
My question is not who's starting week one against Arkansas. It's more so even who's starting games four against Alabama, five against Kentucky, six against Florida, and then closing the season out there, because Georgia should be able to beat Arkansas. And while, yes, I do agree with you that Georgia, Auburn is good enough to beat Georgia in Athens if Georgia's quarterbacks aren't in a row, but Georgia should ultimately, I believe, win that game too. But it's those bigger games, especially that theoretical 11th game at the end of the season, the SEC championship game, where Georgia absolutely has to have its quarterback situations figured out, because right now it does not have that, in my opinion.
All right, I want to talk about Brock Vandegrift, but let me sum up all my thoughts on this very, very succinctly, and I'll give you a chance to respond to this, then we'll move on. I think there's a very good chance that Dwan Mathis takes the first snaps against Arkansas. I think a lot of Georgia fans will really like that. I think some national media people will be pretty skeptical about that. I still think the more likely scenario is that JT Daniels still takes most of the snaps that matter throughout the season. And to be honest with you, I think that's probably a good thing because of the experience that he has. However, my biggest point, and I've said this now a couple of times over the last couple of days, to me as a fan, while the drama about who starts at quarterback is interesting, what's more important is the fact that I just get the sense this offense is still kind of a work in progress right now. And I'm not sure that either of these two guys is ready to step on the field and absolutely just swing for the fences the way that you kind of need a quarterback to if you want to beat teams like Alabama. So regardless of quarterback, as a fan who wants Georgia to win, I remain just a little bit concerned about kind of how all this is coming together.
Kirby would never come out and directly state JT Daniels or Dwan Mathis is our guy. He is our starter. He's the guy who's leading the offense. He's looked great this fall camp. He's done everything we've asked of him. He's fantastic. Kirby Smart will never say that. But I do think that if there was a quarterback that was a little bit more emphatically in the lead or in clear cut the starting quarterback for Georgia, the quote unquote online chatter, as you like to say, would be a little bit different right now about this Georgia offense and what it might look like in 2020.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Let me finish with this. You were in person for Brock Vandegrift, Gunnar Stockton on Friday night. Obviously, Stockton's team gets the win, and Stockton's a very impressive prospect. If he maintains a South Carolina commitment, Gamecocks are getting themselves a good one. I know Vandegrift throws the interceptions. I was watching more of the early portion of the game when Vandegrift's team was really down by a couple of scores. I like what I saw. He throws on the run. I thought he made some very impressive throws that simply weren't caught. He's a physical presence, which I really like. I came away from this game because, listen, I'm not watching, you know, Vandegrift's huddle film 24 hours a day. You know, this was an extended opportunity for me to watch him play. I came away from this understanding why he's such a pretty big prospect. And, you know, you hear stories about the way he performs at Elite 11 and things like that. To me, on the basis of what I saw Friday night, it's not hard for me to imagine that. Yes, statistically, it wasn't great. And yes, his team lost the game, but I thought he made some pretty impressive throws. I came away from Friday night really liking Brock Vandegrift. You were in person. What was your assessment?
One of the things, sort of following the game afterwards, seeing the discussion about it and taking everything into context, or a lot of Georgia fans, maybe not a lot isn't fair, but there were Georgia fans wondering, did we get the wrong quarterback with how Stockton looked versus compared to how Vandegrift looked? And the key point I want to make here, and pay attention to my words, Gunnar Stockton was the better football player on Friday. Brock Vandegrift was the better quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Vandegrift wasn't running around as much as Stockton was. Stockton, I believe, carried the ball 22 times on Friday night. Vandegrift had 11, and most of those came on scramble situations, yeah, whereas Stockton had a lot more designed runs added to his game. I think when I saw Vandegrift, I saw a fluid athlete back there who was very comfortable, as you said, throwing on the run. It looked effortless to him throwing the ball downfield, whereas, in my opinion, Stockton, it looked like he was trying a little bit harder to throw the football, and it just didn't quite look as natural as Vandegrift did. And ultimately, yes, that team fell behind 31-7, and the first interception Vandegrift threw was just bad, and you can't do that in that situation right before the half. But the fact that his team got back into it and tied it up at 31, I think says a lot about Vandegrift and sort of the competitor you hear Gunnar Stockton speak about him as, a guy who, yes, he has all the physical tools, but the thing I came away most impressed with was sort of the gamer aspect there from Vandegrift in the second half, when it could have been very easy to fold up, you're down 31-7 on national TV, and just say, hey, it's just not our night tonight. They fought back, made it 31-31, and just, you know, chips didn't fall where they did. Raven County had the better, more talented football team, in my opinion. But I think Vandergriff did a lot to keep that game as close as it was.
You know, as much as it pains me to say, because I've grown not to like Lincoln Riley very much, the Oklahoma coach, but he only recruits winners at quarterback, and Vandergriff was one of his guys prior to deciding he wanted to stay closer to home and come to Georgia. I thought Vandergriff looked like an Oklahoma quarterback on Friday night. I did. And, yeah, I have to say that I'm even more excited about Brock Vandergriff in the Georgia uniform next season than I was before Friday, after having a chance to see that.
Yeah, in a national TV spotlight for him, I think, to go out and perform the way that he did on a big stage like that, especially for a guy who's not necessarily always playing big-time high school football matchups, given that it is a private single-A school, Prince Avenue Christian.
Yeah, I always get Prince Avenue Christian and Athens Christian confused. There's also Athens Academy as well. Boy, there's a lot of those, yeah.
So I think for him to come out and play as well as he did, and yes, he did throw three interceptions, that's not ideal, but I think over the course of the game, especially in that second half, to me, he just looked a lot better and a lot more comfortable throwing the football than Stockton did. And he's got, if you can go watch the highlights we have on Dog Nation's YouTube page right now, he has the athleticism to where if he needs to create plays with his legs, sort of like Joe Burrow did this weekend for the Bengals, he is more than capable of doing that and picking up yardage as a first down. There were a couple of times, there's one play in particular where pocket breaks down, he's got to make a play with his legs. He turns the corner and gets upfield very quickly to pick up a big third down conversion there. So the athleticism, the naturalness that he has sort of throwing the football, he sort of checked all the boxes that I was looking for, except for, I guess, the win and maybe one or two bad throws over the course of the night.
Yeah, it was great to see Connor. Good coverage. I love the video stuff from there on Friday. Chance to really see those highlights for those who may have missed them in person. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia today. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yep, as always, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, so really good stuff from Connor Riley there, and good to have you here. As I said before, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. There is a very interesting SEC storyline that I want to get to in a moment that's probably unlike anything I've ever heard before. I'll tell you about that coming up in just a second. Before that, let me talk about my friends at MyBookie here. Boy, you want to talk about great stuff that they do. It's winning season at MyBookie. Last night, a Monday Night Football doubleheader. You want to talk about getting in, making those games more fun to watch, get yourself a little action down on one side or the other. Last week, MyBookie Best Bets, both my college picks, sailed. Easy winners. North Carolina, easy win over Syracuse, calling the upset outright for the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette. Many of you are much better at making picks, picking games than I am. If I'm toting two winners in a weekend like that, imagine what you can do when you make your picks. So here's what you need to do. Just put your search engine to work. Type in MyBookie. Internet will find it for you. When you get there, use the promo code DOGNATION. You get a big first deposit bonus. You can get up to $1,000. You get first deposit doubled. They do lots of player perks to kind of get you involved, get you going. You can even, if you've never done it before, I was spending some time on the website the other day. You can kind of just, you know, do some tutorials, learn all about it, find out how to get some action down. And then simply after that, and you know this part, you play, you win, you get paid. But you've got to use the promo code DOGNATION. Big savings when you use that. Big deposit bonus. Get your first deposit doubled. They'll take good care of you. So search MyBookie. Use the promo code DOGNATION, all one word. And after that, you play, you win, you get paid. It's winning season with our friends at MyBookie. All right, so let's talk about this for a moment. And I did a DN90. That's the little short video. At least it's supposed to be short. I can't ever seem to wrap them up as quickly as I'm supposed to. But I did one of these going back to the end of the weekend on Otis Reese, former Georgia safety, still waiting to hear about his situation at Ole Miss. And one of the guys in the same boat as Reese is former Auburn quarterback Joey Gatewood. And the thing I've said on the show a couple of times lately, and I'm starting to feel like, you know, I was more right than maybe even I realized, is that when you look at a guy transferring from one spot to the other, especially if it's SEC, you know, into the SEC, the willingness to cooperate for the player's former school really seems like a pretty paramount part of this discussion. Case in point, you've got reports out there. There was a Rivals report out of the state of Kentucky. Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, has kind of also done some stuff on this. There's a so-called gentleman's agreement in place for Auburn and Kentucky about quarterback Joey Gatewood, that Auburn is willing to basically give the I guess the nod, the thumbs up to Gatewood getting eligibility at Kentucky, because he was at Auburn, you know, last year. He's supposed to sit out by league rule, but Auburn's saying we're willing to let him go to Kentucky. We're willing to let him be eligible. He can play this year, and I believe that if he plays, he has a chance to eventually be Kentucky's starting quarterback. But according to Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, Rivals.com, one of their reporters, the but in all of this is, if Auburn's going to go along with this, the one thing they're asking here is for Gatewood not to play week one against Auburn. Now, in a roundabout way, this seems like sort of a fair trade, right? It's like you can play the other nine. We just don't want a guy that was on our roster a year ago playing against us the first game of the new season. And I can kind of understand that. I mean, you know, a new offensive coordinator, but there's still probably some nuclear codes that Gatewood may be aware of, having played there before. You know, he's kind of got the launch codes, you know, maybe. So I kind of understand that a little bit, why you wouldn't want that to be the case. Plus, it's just a distraction that if you can avoid it, you probably would. Connor Riley mentioned this to me before the show. If you're Kentucky and you do, and they say yes, then you've just simply got to go against your word, break your promise, and just play him anyway, which I think is a pretty diabolical thing to even consider. Maybe this has gone on before. Maybe there are more instances of this than I'm aware of. I'd never heard of this before, but apparently Auburn might be willing to go along with the Joey Gatewood transfer as long as he doesn't play week one against them. A couple other stories here. We have talked about opt-outs for LSU a good bit. They lost a ton of guys in the draft. They had guys leave during the offseason and graduation. Since the last few weeks have been going on, they've had high-profile opt-outs. Well, one of the guys that's opted out is apparently coming back. It's Neil Farrell, a defensive lineman. There are also some rumors coming into Baton Rouge that Tyler Shelvin, another defensive lineman, may be coming back too. And I guess this is just college football in 2020, and I've said this before. If I was a coach, the one thing I'd have a problem with is this sort of one foot in, one foot out mentality of I'm with you through the offseason, but when practice gets tough, that's when I'm deciding, you know, pastures are greener somewhere else. I'm just not going to play. I think it's probably frustrating for Kirby Smart, who dealt with that with Jamie Newman. Frustrating for Ed Orgeron, who's dealt with this on a number of fronts. I got no problem with someone opting out because they have coronavirus concerns. As I said before, college ball is a voluntary activity. You have to respect someone who voluntarily decides they don't want to play anymore. You got to, as the kids like to say, hashtag respect my decision. You got to do that right there. Respect that decision. But what I have a hard time respecting is the I'm going to play, now I'm not going to play, now I'm going to play again. And to kind of keep the get off my lawn theme here, you see the Texas player the other day that quit during the game and now he's coming back? I don't know, man. That seems like a kind of a rough deal there. But I'm sure for LSU, who's dealt with a bunch of opt-outs, the idea they're getting Farrell back, maybe getting Shelvin back to go along there for a Dave Aranda, he's the coach of Baylor now, Bo Pelini's defense. I'm sure that they may be pretty happy about that. By the way, speaking of Bo Pelini, former Nebraska coach in the Big Ten, and the Big Ten continues its deliberations about whether or not they're going to play this upcoming season. I find this whole thing to be maddening. There was report from, I guess, the Wisconsin chancellor about the notion that it's all or nothing. Either the entire league is playing or no one's playing. Popular radio host Dan Patrick has suggested that maybe some teams, including maybe even a couple of high-profile teams, might choose not to play this year, even if other Big Ten teams did. I'll never understand how this league can have the entirety of the national media in its back pocket and still cannot craft a sensible message. It's amazing to me. How with every passing day, the Big Ten looks worse and worse and worse. But nonetheless, that is the scenario, and we will make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, I want to turn my attention back to Georgia here for a moment. And I want to specifically turn my attention back to the status of Georgia's 2021 recruiting class. Jeff Sintel, our recruiting insider, who will be with us on Friday, has had a great three-part series of articles with five-star defensive lineman Mason Smith. One of the things that Jeff had mentioned in the Dog Nation Forum was that he didn't intend to do any kind of big profile of Smith unless he thought there was a legitimate chance that Smith could be coming to Georgia. Well, obviously, the chances are legitimate enough now that that is what Jeff has decided to do. In fact, in the part three piece that was put up at DogNation.com yesterday, one of the things that Smith talked about was that basically he rekindled the relationship. You can read this full thing at DogNation.com, and you should. But he rekindled the relationship with Georgia after kind of being kind of dormant there for a while. He kind of reached out to Trey Scott, the Georgia defensive line coach, kind of out of the blue, and that's kind of how things got started up again. And maybe apparently Trey Scott may have been wondering, how real is this? Georgia's chances with the five-star defensive lineman from Louisiana, but apparently Smith rekindled that flame enough that it has gotten very real since then. And one of the things you like to see, and I think this is a very important narrative for Georgia, both on and off the field going into the upcoming season. Mason Smith was asked by Jeff specifically to kind of give his thoughts about what it is that he likes about Georgia. And he zeroes in on the Georgia coaches in particular as one of the things that he really likes. Let me read you this brief quote from Smith from Jeff's article, and I hope you read the entirety for yourself there at dognation.com. So what do you like about Georgia? Actually, that may be a different Mason Smith quote. Do we have a different one? Maybe I sent you the wrong one. So there's a different, that's a quote we used the other day. There's a different, yeah, there we go. There's Mason Smith right there. So he's asked, what do you like about Georgia? He says, it's definitely the coaches. Smith goes on to say, I know you're not supposed to go to a school for the coach, but it's kind of hard when you talk to them every day. Honestly, anybody can tell the real from the fake coaches. I definitely feel they are very real coaches. And the assumption here is one of those real coaches that he's talking about is his position coach. If he goes to Georgia, the defensive line coach, Trey Scott. And, you know, it's a consistent theme that recruits say that they feel like they get a genuine pitch from Georgia, real and not fake. We've heard other guys say that before. But beyond that, let me speak as a fan for a moment, someone who wants Smith to come to Georgia and wants as many elite prospects as Georgia can get at all position groups. There are a number of Georgia position coaches who have established for themselves some very impressive credentials. Just going out there, getting the job done at recruiting, you can cite a lot of them. For me, Trey Scott is very quickly becoming an assistant coach that I think the Georgia fans ought to trust in a spot like this. Pressure, recruitment, contested LSU, coming on strong, trying to keep the young man inside the state of Louisiana. I think if you're a Georgia fan, based on the win with Jalen Carter, based on the win with Trayvon Walker, based on the other defensive linemen who've joined this program the last few cycles, I think you've got to view Trey Scott as the kind of assistant coach that can win these battles. And when you think about a group that has a chance this year to really make a name for itself, Smith and some of the other pieces at DogNation.com has cited, you know, Georgia's drought for having defensive linemen be drafted. He's noticed that. He's looking to see that change. But if there was ever a time over the course of the next couple of years with Jordan Davis emerging as one of the SEC's top players possibly, certainly Trayvon Walker has the look of, you know, someone who sky could be the limit for as a player, to say nothing of Carter, who I mentioned before, that this is a really big opportunity for the guys that Trey Scott has already recruited to do big things on the field this year. My guess is that would get someone like Mason Smith's attention. When Georgia fans are thinking about who are the top assistant coaches on this roster, the name Trey Scott, I'm guessing, is going to start being mentioned a lot more prominently in discussions like that. So it's good to have you on the show today. As Connor said, we'll get a chance to hear from Kirby Smart very soon. And maybe Smart will shed some more, you know, light. I'm guessing not. But maybe he'll shed some more light on what really is going on with the quarterback situation, how healthy JT Daniels is. That's a huge unknown in all of this. And how much of the buzz around Mathis and his possible emergence, is that just a smokescreen to motivate the experienced Daniels to beat his best? Or is this really one of the great feel-good stories in recent Georgia history of a guy going from football future in doubt to even ever be able to play again to all of a sudden QB1 for the Georgia Bulldogs? It's a fun one to deal with. We're looking forward to following all of it no matter where it goes, and of course talking to you about it here on Dog Nation Daily presented by ESOG. Let me also give you Gator Hater Updater on the way out the door here. 1,417 days. Y'all have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.